Welcome to the Packet Pushers Priority Queue channel. Ethan Banks here at EC Banks on Twitter. EthanCBanks.com is my blog site. And today we're going to do a quick show talking a little bit about iSCSI network design with VMware. And my guest today is Chris Wall, who has been on the show before. Chris, welcome to the show. And would you introduce yourself to the Packet Pushers audience?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I'm at Chris Wall, W-A-H-L on the Twitters, and I run a blog called Wall Network at wallnetwork.com. And I'm probably best known for being a huge iSCSI hater. That's probably where most of my experience comes from, is getting it to work properly.
Oh, cool. And you're also co-author of a book about VMware networking, aren't you?
Yeah, thanks for reminding me. I tend to forget what I do here. So yeah, I've got a book called Networking for VMware Administrators. It came out about a year ago. It's meant to kind of bridge the gap between folks that are in the networking world and the virtualization world to hopefully sing Kumbaya and roast marshmallows together.
Kumbaya. I have to get that sheet music. One of your posts on wallnetwork.com caught my eye, and the title of the post was When to Use Multiple Subnet iSCSI Network Design. And so I thought about this, and that immediately grabbed my attention from the standpoint of anytime I've dealt with any sort of IP storage, the rule of thumb has always been you keep everything on a single subnet. It's like you can do it, but you shouldn't, you know, force traffic to go through a routed hop. And then I got into the post a bit, and it's more complicated than that, what's going on. And you've actually got some design reasons why it would be good or bad, as the case may be, to put iSCSI traffic through multiple subnets. So I thought we'd just kind of walk through some high level stuff and then get into some of the specifics that you covered in the blog post. First up, am I right in thinking that a typical iSCSI network design is in a single broadcast domain, a one subnet?
Yeah, typically, that's where you'd want to go for a number of reasons. One, it's a simpler type of topology. You know, you've got that one VLAN and one subnet that you've stretched from your ESXi host area of the data center all the way over to your storage area. And it's certainly the design that I tend to default to, unless I'm working with a vendor that's specifically saying, no, we prefer multiple subnet. And VMware has some tools that make single subnet much easier than it used to be. I think around the 4.0 days, they introduced things like binding that make single subnet much more attractive.
Mm. Okay. So you do see that typically, but it's not. I mean, I guess one of the things that I was always, you know, taught about as a rule of thumb with storage is you want everybody to be as low latency and close together as possible. I mean, I even have seen some designs where rather than sharing the storage data across the same data center network that everybody else is doing, someone will actually stand up isolated Ethernets, which is just for storage traffic, just to make sure it's all special and, you know, treated. I don't know, however they got to treat. I mean, do you see that show up every now and again?
That topology is kind of rare. I think we have, you know, priority flow control and other technologies baked into the Ethernet, you know, standards that make sharing switches much more attractive. And that's kind of the point with iSCSI, is you want to go away from a kind of fiber channel switch investment that people do in the FC world. You want to double down on your Ethernet switches to save cost.
Yep. That's a very diplomatic way of saying, why are you doing the same thing you always did? IP storage is about convergence. Why are we rebuilding our fiber channel networks in the form of Ethernet? That's not the point. Yeah. That was always my take on it too. But I've had those discussions with people, especially people with a fiber channel background, who go, no, you can't. We have to have it on its own thing. There's no other way to do it.
Oh. Yeah, sometimes on smaller investments, you'll see, okay, we have an iSCSI pair of switches because it's kind of a small office and we don't want to use up ports on our kind of beefier edge device. But again, it's pretty rare these days.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So fair enough. So, and now we're really introducing a new, if routed is another possible option, when do you see the, you know, routed option, meaning you've got an iSCSI target and an iSCSI initiator on two different subnets going through a router at some point so that they can communicate? Does that come up a lot or?
Well, you really should never route, and even in a multiple subnet topology, we're not actually routing any of the packets across different subnets. Mm-hmm. So I would advise against it at pretty much any point. You know, we want to keep it all kind of layer two, same subnet, same VLAN whenever possible. Even if it's a multi-subnet design, we're still wanting to stay in the switched world. And if you end up going with something like VM kernel binding from VMware, they don't even support routing. So it's kind of a no-no.
So, okay. So when we're talking about multi-subnet in the context of VMware, what we're really talking about is some of the iSCSI initiators are going to be in one subnet matching targets that are in that same subnet. And then you've got other initiators and targets in a different subnet.
Yeah, and we don't want those two to talk across each other. And really, if you kind of peel back the onion and look at the core reason why we might set up multiple subnets, it has to do more with the storage array that we're talking with, how many front-end ports it's being configured with, how many targets from an iSCSI perspective it's being configured with, and kind of the growth potential for the controllers on the storage array is usually a common use case to go to a multiple subnet design. And you're exactly right. It's going to be kind of like in the FC world, you're going to have two different vSANs, an A vSAN, a vSAN. It's going to be similar. You're going to have an A VLAN or B VLAN for your iSCSI traffic. And you're going to kind of delineate that at the NIC level on the host. You know, kind of everything goes out the A side on one port, the B side on the other port, or a C, D side, depending on how crazy complex you want to make the environment. But that's the same kind of premise. It's very fiber channel-like.
Got it. Okay. So let's bring this into some of the specifics that you got into in your blog post here. And so we're moving from just kind of high-level iSCSI design and some of the things that you would do more into exactly how you're going to configure this thing and what some of the concerns are. So let's start with the way VMware connects to storage. I mean, just for people who don't, do VMware plumbing, how would you, talk a bit about how the host interfaces are set up and some of the terminology behind them.
So the most granular unit of connectivity is the VM kernel interface, or the VMK NIC. And it's basically the way that the hypervisor itself creates a logical port to talk out on the network. So typically you have virtual machines and they have their own virtual network adapters, and they consume kind of your L2 vSwitch to get out into the physical world. Well, the hypervisor needs the same kind of vehicle to talk to the storage array. So that's the VM kernel. And that is how we're going to kind of tell it how to go from layer 5 iSCSI all the way down to put packets on the wire and send them out to the storage array. So we'll configure the IP address, the mask, and it'll take the gateway that's been assigned on kind of the management interface. So gateway is really not in scope for an iSCSI interface. And we don't want to really use a gateway anyways. It should just be same subnet traffic. But that's right. How we can tell host, here's how you talk to storage. Use this particular subnet to connect. And the routing table of the hypervisor is going to kind of interrogate all the VM kernel interfaces, see what subnet they're on. And then if I'm trying to talk to a storage array that's on the same subnet as an iSCSI VM kernel interface that I created, that's going to be enforced by the routing table. It's going to see that I've got an interface on the same subnet as the storage array. So I'm going to send traffic out of that VM kernel logical interface. And then under the covers, it kind of determines what the mapping will be between the logical VM kernel interface and the physical VM NIC, or the physical network adapter on the host.
I think one thing that some people who haven't done this before might not be grasping is what's actually happening is, as you said, the VM kernel interface is used by the host to talk to something on the outside world. In this case, we're talking about storage. Okay, well, most people that are used to maybe not working in a virtualized world are thinking, well, I could have my Windows box and then stand up an iSCSI connection directly. Well, in fact, you've got the hypervisor kind of in the middle of that conversation. He's going to connect up to iSCSI and then present virtual storage up to the VMs. And so he's kind of arbitrating things. Do you ever have a scenario where a virtual machine would be talking directly to iSCSI storage, or is he always talk through the hypervisor?
Yeah, sure. There's definitely use cases where you'd want to go. It's typically called in-guest iSCSI connectivity, using the, such as Windows software iSCSI initiator inside of the Windows operating system. Usually those use cases are, I need a very large blob of storage and I don't want the hypervisor being involved in that conversation. Maybe historically you could only do a 2 terabyte data store presentation to a VMDK, or rather make a VMDK that was 2 terabytes in size. And you may have some giant file server that needed a 30 terabyte volume on an iSCSI target or a LUN. And so therefore you're connecting in the guest, or perhaps you're doing a backup system and you don't want the hypervisor being involved. So you just mount a LUN using iSCSI in the guest. But by and large, in a lot of cases, we want to present shared storage by way of iSCSI so that all of the hypervisor hosts are able to present this singular view of the storage so that when the VMs move across, they can, they don't really know about that. And if you're looking at using most any kind of third-party software, backups, et cetera, they're going to ignore anything configured in the guest because they can't see it. They're typically backing up the VM or the VM disk as a granular unit. And if we connect storage inside the guest operating system, the backup software can't see that. So in most cases, we're going to want to connect to the hypervisor.
Got it. Okay. So assuming we've decided to do that, and now we've got the VM kernel interfaces that we're using to accomplish that. One of the issues here, which I think you started to get into, was VM kernel binding or not, which really was at the heart of your blog article, the circumstance in which you use VM kernel binding and when you don't. Can you set that up for us?
It's pretty simple. If you really just boil it down, it's I have more than one NIC on the hypervisor. I have more than one physical port to get out to the physical network. And I would like to use more than one of those at a time. I don't want to pin all of my traffic to one NIC. And so the question is, how do I do that? And in a single subnet design, I talked a little earlier about the routing table. I could make 10 VM kernel interfaces on the iSCSI subnet, but the routing table is just going to find the first one and start sending traffic out that one NIC, essentially. And so in a single subnet design, VM kernel binding is a way that you can kind of specially inform the hypervisor that, hey, I want to use multiple NICs and multiple VM kernel interfaces to send traffic for iSCSI out and into the hypervisor. So it's a way to kind of skirt around the whole routing table issue on one subnet. And then if you want to use multiple subnets, that's a different way to kind of do that.
So you're actually doing a binding and saying, hey, these interfaces, I want you to use, this interface and these other ones as well for storage traffic. Is that what binding is happening here effectively?
Yeah, the binding process is saying, let's say I have two VM kernel interfaces because I have two physical NICs on the host. You'll say the first interface is bound to the first physical NIC, and the second logical VM kernel interface is bound to the second physical NIC. And the binding process kind of presents that to the iSCSI stack and says, here are two unique ways to get in and out of the storage path, and they use two physical NICs, et cetera. You have to set them up a little bit specific way logically, but that's a way you can tell the hypervisor you have two paths to storage, even though realistically you only have one subnet.
Mm, okay. And at that point, the algorithm, how does it round robin? Is there a particular load balancing method it uses across all the different interfaces that are available?
It depends slightly on who you pick for the target storage array and what their essentially their pathing storage plugin is going to be. But generically, it's typically round robin. I believe in most versions of the hypervisor would send 1,000 IO down one path and then alternate 1,000 IO down the other path. And if you get enough traffic going on across different virtual machines, then you get a lot of kind of spread even traffic across those NICs. You may have a 1,000 IO in this guy, 1,000 IO in the other guy, and it kind of spreads itself pretty nicely as you add more load to the hypervisor.
Okay. So we use VM kernel binding, and that allows us to spread the load within the same subnet across multiple physical interfaces and get a roughly a round robin load balancing, just depending on exactly what your implementation is.
Right.
Now, we had talked a little bit earlier about a scenario where you might want to have certain of those interfaces in different subnets. And if I remember right, in that case, VM kernel binding is not the direction you want to go.
Yeah, because the technology for the kernel binding is going to typically you're going to set up a send target or a dynamic target activity to find out all the targets on the array. So you're going to plug in the array's IP address in a lot of cases or a DNS name, and you're going to request that it come back and give you all of the targets. So it's a send targets activity. And if you're using multiple subnets with VM kernel binding, the targets are going to come back from the array. It's going to tell you, I've got these various targets in these multiple different subnets. But the kernel binding process requires that the interface on the host or the multiple interfaces log into all the iSCSI targets.
I get it. So, okay. So he can present targets that are not on the same subnet, and yet he's going to have to try to log in across the into a different subnet,
right,
which he can't do because there's that functionality isn't even there.
Exactly. And in most cases, we haven't set up routing on iSCSI VLAN. So if you have VLAN A and it's trying to talk to VLAN B, that just typically isn't possible in the network. You haven't configured that because you don't want routing. And so it'll typically work in the way that the iSCSI connection will be made. You'll see some timeouts. There'll be some errors saying that all of the initiators couldn't talk to the targets. And it's not a supported topology anyway. So you really want to avoid, if you have multiple subnets, you really can't use VM kernel binding. It's not a supported topology.
So this is one of those scenarios where if you actually set it up that way without meaning to, it might sort of work for a while.
Yes. And that's why a lot of people hate iSCSI. And a lot of times I'm helping people get out of this kind of pitfall is that they have set up, maybe looked at a vendor documentation, set up multiple subnets, but then also looked at VMware's documentation and set up kernel binding. And it sort of works, but they're having all these issues. And when they try to rescan the targets, it takes forever. And they're like, oh, this is terrible. Well, that's kind of why. I wish it would just not let you do it. That would be even better.
Yeah.
But
okay,
it's not reality.
Now, okay. But in your blog post, you mentioned there is a way that you can get you can use multiple subnets, and if I understood it right, you can still get some load balancing across physical NICs. Did I understand that right?
Yeah. So really the case where you'd want to use multiple subnets is if you had a lot of targets or a lot of front end ports on the target array and you're worried about binding, because binding is going to show you, or binding is going to equate to every initiator on your host is going to connect to every target on the storage array. And if you only have two physical NICs on the host, but in essence you have 8 or 16 paths to the storage array, you've got an overcommit rate of 4-1 or 8-1 on the host. And what can happen is, let's say we're round robining across paths, 1,000 IO, 1,000 IO, et cetera. It could be that 4,000 IO are on the same physical NIC on the hypervisor before I get to the paths that are on the other physical NIC or something like that. And plus,
we're logging
into 8 targets across two. You know, it's just really wasteful. There's a lot of chatter that goes on. And
yeah, so you end up having to stand up a full mesh of connections between targets and initiators. And
right.
then... and then if, as you were saying, if you're oversubscribed with targets from the host side initiators, you could have one initiator talking to four different targets. And so therefore your load balancing is not as evenly distributed as you want, because he's going to talk to four different targets before he has a reason to shift over to the second NIC and then start talking out that side.
Yeah. So really the underlying goal is you want to have a path for each initiator to the controllers on the storage array. You know, you want to make sure that no matter what goes down, I have, you know, double the paths total, so that if I lose a NIC on the hypervisor or I lose a controller on the storage array, that means I lost half my paths. I still have one path to everything left. You don't want a 4-1 or 8-1, you know, ratio. You really want 2-1 total. And that way you have full redundancy across all of your NICs and storage controllers.
Okay. So in that scenario, do I also get load balancing for each network where I might have targets and initiators, or is it more of, you know, an active passive? Or
from the hypervisor's perspective, it's going to be fully active because the routing table is not an issue anymore. We have two different subnets to get to the storage array. And when we connected the LUNs and we found those targets on the storage array, we connected it over multiple subnets. And so therefore, when we try to get to a LUN on the storage array, the hypervisor is aware that it has multiple VM kernel initiators that can get to the storage array across different subnets. And so now it really just depends on how the storage array is configured, whether or not we have multiple controllers actively serving IO for that LUN, or if it's an active passive controller topology, et cetera.
Okay. Yeah. In other words, it's not as simple as looking at things simply from the VMware host side. You are also integrating with the storage array itself and how it's been provisioned on that end to know how traffic's actually going to flow through this infrastructure.
Yeah. But fortunately, the storage array is going to tell it, you know, there's the T10 standards have ways that they can communicate back and forth as to what is the active controller, what is the active path, which one's serving IO. There's things like a Lua for asymmetrical LUN unit access, so that they can communicate and figure out which controller should I be talking to at once. But ultimately, in a multi-subnet design, let's say you have a two controller storage array, both controllers will have access to both subnets. You're going to have a front end port, at least two of them on each controller, one for subnet A, one for subnet B, so that we can actively serve different subnets worth of traffic to each controller, no matter which one's active, or if one fails, it'll switch to the other one, et cetera. Just the design kind of changes a little bit depending on what storage array we're talking to. From the hypervisor perspective, it's all pretty much the same.
Nice. Any other wisdom that you wanted to share on this topic?
Just that, you know, if you're looking to deploy this sort of topology, single or multiple subnet design, really take a good look at what your vendor supports. You know, I personally like the single subnet binding topology. You know, it's less VLANs to build. It's easier to troubleshoot. And most modern storage arrays today don't have a whole lot of front end ports. They're kind of node designed. And I don't know, the day of having 16 ports connecting physically over 1 gig switch ports it's just kind of dead. You know,
I was just going to say, it sounds like a 1 gig design to me, you know, in the days of 10 gig and soon more. Yeah. But, why?
Yeah. So definitely pay really close attention to what your vendor supports. Cause at the end of the day, you know, if they're not going to support it, you're putting your business at risk, and you want to make sure that they are going to be able to offer you a quick resolution to an issue. That's not, Hey, you messed up the topology, read our documentation. So, you know, don't let your personal desire to go one way over the other steer you into a risk zone for support.
Nice. Well, Chris, thank you for joining us on Packet Pusher's Priority Queue today. And just on the way out, would you once again plug your Twitter handle so that people know where to find you?
At Chris Wahl, again, Chris and then W-A-H-L. I look like a yellow Simpsons character. Feel free to hit me up or check out the blog, walnetwork.com. Look at those IceCuzzy articles.
And I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter. EthanCBanks.com is my blog. And of course, this has been a Packet Pusher's Priority Queue. PacketPushers.net is our hub site for shows in Priority Queue, our weekly show, The Network Break, and so on. If you have any questions about this show, you want to talk to Chris or to me and find out more information, if you can't remember anything else, you could give a try, packetpushers@gmail.com. We do respond to all our email just as quick as we can. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.